Good afternoon. It's a Juno afternoon, and I'm Andy Klein, your host on this Thursday. We've got a bunch of folks we're going to be talking to today on a Juno afternoon, including people who are putting on Juno Dance Unlimited's presentation of The Nutcracker. Also going to be talking to Robin Gray Davis about a comedy and character workshop he's putting on Friday at the Canvas. There's a pet food drive happening, and folks from Grateful Dogs of Juno will be here to speak to us about what's happening there. Also, a bouldering competition is going to be happening at the Rock Dump this weekend. And Nancy DeCherney will be here from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council to talk to us about what's happening in the arts in Juno here as we head into another wonderful weekend here in Juno. We've got mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day with a chance of rain and snow showers. Highs around 35 degrees. Rain and snow likely late tonight with snow accumulation up to 2 inches and lows around 31 degrees. Snow in the morning for Friday and rain in heading out past the morning with snow accumulation to 2 inches. Snow level, though, rising to 500 feet, so it'll be rain here at sea level and highs around 35 degrees with rain changing to snow late Friday night with lows around 31 degrees. Right now, here's National Native News.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Wisconsin county has filed a lawsuit against a federal agency to get information on a possible land deal that would benefit a local tribe. Steve Risom reports.
Sauk County officials accused the U.S. Department of the Interior of withholding access to public records. The county wants to know what the Ho-Chunk is planning to do with 600 acres that the tribe wants to put in a land trust. If the trust status is approved, the Ho-Chunk would not have to pay property taxes on those acres. Right now, Sauk County collects about $700,000 in property taxes from that land every year. Sauk County Board Chair Marty Krieger says Ho-Chunk President John Greendeer hasn't shared a lot of details. He says the documents would help the board to evaluate the tribe's plans.
In order for us to be in favor of something as well as against something, we have to know what's being presented.
The intention, according to Greendeer, is to create jobs. As for specifics, Greendeer says he's keeping them close to his chest for now.
Historically, Sauk County has run opposition to our applications for different reasons. The most recent is, I guess, what is kind of the centerpiece of today is the FOIA request or the Freedom of Information Act that the Sauk County Board has sought.
Several attempts to contact the U.S. Department of the Interior for comment were unsuccessful. The Ho-Chunk isn't the only Wisconsin tribe to have run into problems when trying to put land into trust. In the 1980s, the Menominee and Stockbridge tribes wanted to put Shawnee County land into a trust. A local township tried to stop the action, but the tribes prevailed. I'm Steve Risom.
The fate of a troubled tribal casino project in Oklahoma remains in limbo. KGOU's Kirk Gortney reports.
Tribal council members with the Muscogee Creek Nation have voted against taking over a controversial casino near Tulsa, Oklahoma, initially set up by the Kyleege tribal town. Council members voted 7-2 against the proposal Tuesday night. If the council had approved the plan, officials say the Muscogee Creek Nation would have received 70% of profits from the Red Clay Casino. Work on that project was stopped earlier this year at the casino site after a federal judge ruled the Kyleege tribal town did not have jurisdiction to build the casino on the land in Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. Developers had hoped to finish work on the Red Clay and then sell it to the Muscogee Creek Nation. Kyleege officials have said the casino could bring in $25 million a year. Several city, county, and state officials have objected to the casino's construction. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney.
The U.S. Department of Education is conducting a study about a college and its work with Native youth. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Red Cloud School is a private Catholic facility on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. The school has a working relationship with the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology in Rapid City, a couple hours away from Pine Ridge. The university has sponsored several summer programs for students at Red Cloud, including classes and camps, and the Department of Education is interested in what they're doing. The DOE is working on a study to determine the impact of those programs. Two officials with the School of Mines are taking part in interviews with the Department of Education at the Red Cloud School. Information from the interviews will end up in the study and also in a lessons learned guide. As part of the day's activities, the university representatives had a chance to talk to students about the School of Mines and Technology. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellen Bolt.
During this month in 1854, the Treaty of Medicine Creek was signed, which created three reservations for Northwest tribes. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use Pick Click Give when filing online for your PFD. When you select KNBA-FM, Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, you support National Native News. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Kiwanis is accepting artwork for the 2013 Alaska Native Art Auction scheduled March 7, 2013. Proceeds benefit KNBA and Native Public Radio programming. Call 907-793-3528 for more information.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Well, the familiar Dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy is one of the centerpieces of the Nutcracker, and that's coming up thanks to Juno Dance Unlimited, putting it on here coming up just this Saturday. And Philip Crowder and Charlotte Truitt are with me from JDU. Thanks, you guys, for coming in the studio. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, no problem. So the Nutcracker, taking on the Nutcracker here for the holidays, makes for a busy holiday season for you, I'm sure. But it's just this one weekend, so people need to know. If you want to go to see the Nutcracker from JDU this weekend,
It's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's December 14th, 15th, and 16th. We have a Friday the 14th at 7 p.m. On Saturday, we have a matinee at 2 and an evening performance at 7 and a matinee on Sunday at 2 p.m. the 16th. And this year, we're adding a matinee on Saturday. In the past, we didn't have a Saturday matinee, but this year we're adding an extra performance because our production is becoming popular.
Yeah.
And we've been working really hard, and we're ready to do it, and we're ready to present it to the Juno audience, all the dance lovers out there.
Well, you've got, as everyone who's seen the Nutcracker, it's a mix between adults and children. Children play an integral role in the plot and the dancing and all that. So what are some of the challenges of dealing with both children and adults when you're putting on a production like this?
Well, the Nutcracker Ballet is a wonderful vehicle for children, especially at a school like ours. We have so many children that are involved in it. I think we have 17, 18 children involved at different aspects of it. We have the party children who are in the first act party scene. We have soldiers. We have angels. We have Paul Chanel's, which are the clowns, the Mother Ginger character. Children just love doing those parts, and the audience loves to watch them do it.
Yeah. And our youngest dancers are about age 6, and those are our baby mice.
Yes, the baby mice.
And it's a great opportunity for young children to get involved in dance, and oftentimes we find that if they start really young, they stay with it. And I think you find that among most of our advanced dancers. They've been doing the Nutcracker for many, many years.
You know, what's interesting or strikes me about it is that unlike a lot of plays or dances when you maybe are dealing with children where they're supposed to be playing adults.
Right.
In this, they're children playing children. If they do childlike things, perhaps while they're dancing, it's okay. They're children.
That's what we want, yes.
Wonderful entertainment.
It's a great ballet for children because it also, you know, for training purposes, it gives them opportunity to learn what it's like to be on stage. The parts are age-appropriate for them. They get the full theater experience. They also get to see the older dancers who have gone before them performing, the older girls. And so it's just a real thrill for them to be able to participate.
So there's lots of Christmas stories and holiday stories out there. Why do you think the Nutcracker is so enduring as something that just seems like it isn't the holiday seasons without seeing the Nutcracker?
especially in America.
Yeah.
The Nutcracker has taken on a life of its own in this country.
Is that right?
Absolutely.
More so than Europe. It's more beloved here in a way.
In Europe, they might perform, it's just another ballet there, they might perform it like in the middle of the summer in July.
Oh.
Whereas here, it's you know, Americans love Christmas, they love the holidays, you know, and so Nutcracker is a real family tradition for a lot of people in this country. It's really comes to signify a Christmas.
Right.
You know, it starts with a Christmas party where Clara gets a present from her godfather, Drosselmeyer. It's a Nutcracker. Later, it comes to life. It battles the evil Mouse King underneath the Christmas tree.
Who is evil.
Definitely, mm-hmm. He's evil.
Bad king.
And, you know, and they overcome, and then the Nutcracker escorts her off to the Snowland, and then later to the Candyland, where she's entertained by all the different characters in the story, and then they have the big waltz of the flowers dance, you know, that everybody's familiar with, and then the Sugar Plum Fairy appears and dances with her cavalier, and it's fun had by all.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, it's such a great story, and you're right. I mean, that's so funny to think about that I wouldn't think of doing it or seeing it. It seems so strange to see it not around the holiday seasons, but...
It's big in America. Everywhere you go in the United States, there's Nutcracker productions everywhere, and we're thrilled to be able to do that here. The Juno audience has always been very responsive to our production, and, you know, every year we try to make it, you know, better, we try to add more. This year we have two male guest artists coming, Michael Gill and Jonathan Carey.
Where are they based?
Michael Gill is a Russian who's based in New York, and Jonathan is a young dancer based in Huntsville, Alabama, who's been training around the country. And Michael Gill is going to do the Cavalier of the Sugar Plum Fairy this year. Our Sugar Plum Fairy is going to be Mari Nu, a local girl, or one of our own students. And Jonathan Carey is going to do a new part as the Snow King with Misha Culver, who is our... going to be our Snow Queen this year, and they're going to do a pas de deux. That's all new choreography, new costumes for that.
Say new choreography, is that how does that all work? Isn't there sort of set choreography for this?
It changes from year to year.
It changes up to whoever is putting the show on.
Yeah, this year again, you know, we always try to make improvements on the ballet, make it fresh. You know, so any opportunity I get as a choreographer to do that, I take, you know. Charge. And
are there standard things though that are kind of known to supposed to sort of are they're supposed to happen in this ballet?
Yes.
Like it's not that dance of the Sugar Plum Fairy unless she does this certain move, or is it
there's a certain amount of tradition involved in the choreography, especially with a dance like that, but it's a lot of it's free for up to interpretation to the choreographer and the dancers. We work together to come up with the best presentation that we can.
Best fit for the dancers
Our dancers are very strong. A lot of our older girls, our advanced dancers, go off to summer intensive programs at all the major ballet companies in the United States, and they come back. They're better dancers. They're better trained. They have a great experience. And so we take advantage of that and put them in these big productions here in Juno.
Yeah,
and the Juno audience gets to enjoy the benefits of that right. hard training that these girls do every summer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what's new this year is we're going to be adding pas de deux. That's why we're bringing the two guest male artists in.
I don't speak that language, whatever you
it's
just
a dance
said.
For two. Pas de deux is a dance for two.
Duet.
I see. Pas de deux. Okay.
Dance for two.
Right.
Yeah. And also, we're also going to be adding...
I know plie. That's about as far as I go.
Good if you know plie.
I know plie.
And also, we're going to be doing a new pas de deux of Arabian. The Arabian dance in the past here has always been a girl doing a solo, but this year it's going to be a pas de deux, and we're really thrilled about that. It looks wonderful, and I'm sure the audience is going to enjoy that.
Is that a particular challenge for those... So those two dancers to do that as a duet versus a solo, is that, you know?
Oh, it adds a new element to
right.
it. The overhead lifts, turns, maneuvering the girl around, partnering, just the way they interact with each other
right.
with the music and his characters. It's wonderful.
Our guest artist arrived about 2 weeks ago. So the girls and the guys have been working daily to come up with that chemistry together to partner. Mm. And it is a new challenge, but they are up for it. And it's really amazing.
Great.
And one thing I was going to just mention for the local Juno audience, I think people that are new to it are amazed at the level of quality in the dance. And like Philip said, they are getting good training here year round. We're very lucky to have Philip Crowder here as a former professional dancer. For a community our size, we are very fortunate that we have year round excellent training, and our advanced dancers are getting accepted all around the country. And then they go in to the special programs and they come back and they're even better, and he can even take them even further with the choreography. So it's not just a cute little kids show. I think people are stunned and shocked at what high quality is mm-hmm. there.
What other stuff for you guys? So this is happening this weekend. Mm-hmm. It's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Don't sleep on this, folks. It's going to happen.
Get those tickets.
It's going to be at the JDHS Auditorium. And if you want more information, you can call 463-LEAP. That's 463-5327, or 463-LEAP, as we like to say.
Yes.
Or you can also contact, go online to junodance.org. We're going to have tickets available online at the Juno Arts Humanities Council. You can also get tickets at the JAC, at the center, at Hearthside Books, at JDU, or at the door.
So that's great. So tell me a little bit about other productions, other things you at JDU is kind of working on for the upcoming mm-hmm. season.
Well, we have a very active, ongoing, year-round school of over about 200 students, and our next semester starts in January. So if people want to start up a new dance class, January 7th, this year we're going to have online registration, so you can do it from the comfort of your own home. That's going to start up next week. It'll be available. But right now, our schedule and our tuition rates are available online. They can start registering next week for classes. And
where's the web address they could go to?
The web address is junodance.org.
Okay.
And our classes run through May. We kind of mirror the public school schedule. Mm-hmm. And those classes are coming up. We'll have a spring performance in May, which is our ballet to Broadway, which incorporates our theater dance. And we're very fortunate to have Richie Adan here doing top-level, Broadway-level choreography for theater dance. She has the ability to do choreography from Fosse and Carol Hand and many
others.
Yeah, because
it's not all ballet that you guys do. You guys
ballet.
Do the
yes.
wide range
theater
of...
Dance,
yes, we offer modern,
hip-hop. Modern as well.
So. We try to have a very well-structured school offering many different syllabuses.
Yeah, and it kind of touches on the entire art form of dance and the beauty and fun mm-hmm. and excitement and athleticism that dance
yes.
has. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then,
yeah.
Then in the summer, in June, we do the Fine Arts Camp. And not everyone knows that we are the organizers and the producers of the Fine Arts Camp. That does have a dance component with the Weber Dance Company that comes here from Boston. They'll be doing about a four-week intensive, and they then perform out at Thunder Mountain High School. And they also do some of their original work as well, which has been very well received in the summertime, which is all modern and contemporary dance.
Great. So junodance.org, the place to go for
yes.
people to check out what's happening. January 7th is the deadline that's happening at first time, or that's when the classes start.
First week of classes.
Okay,
yes.
So class schedule go online next week.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this is a good time to think about what you want to do, getting into it if you're a beginner, if you're someone who wants to get back into it, or if you're someone who's continuing your work in dance.
Right.
Next week is the time to sign up for those courses.
Yeah, actually the schedule is already online now, and they can come on anytime and check it out.
Great.
Go to our website and look at the schedule.
All right, so one more time, the Nutcracker, tell folks the exact times and dates so that they have it in their heads and know and tell them where to get tickets and all that stuff.
Okay. It's going to be December 14th, 15th, and 16th. That's this weekend. It's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's going to be at the JDHS Auditorium. It's going to be at 7 p.m. on Friday night, 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. on Saturday, and a final matinee on Sunday at 2 p.m. And you can get tickets online at the JAC or at the JAC.
Go physically to the JAC.
And also at Hearthside Books, at JDU, or at the door.
Okay, great. Well, now, what do you say to say good luck to dancers? You don't say break a leg.
Yes, you do.
Absolutely. You do?
Uh-huh, yes.
That doesn't seem right.
don't say good.
Don't say that.
No, you won't even say it right now. Yes,
okay.
Yes. Actually, there's a French term we use, but we can't say it on the air.
Oh, okay. Well, French term to you for...
You can say break a leg. It's perfectly
okay.
Fine.
I don't want to say that to a dancer. I can't bring myself to say it. But have a great time.
Thank
it's going to
so
be a
much.
Great time. Have fun with it. And everyone
Thank
out
you.
There, make sure you go see it. It's the Nutcracker. It's happening this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. barbecue. Huh? That's fun right there. Well, perfect. We've got improv and comedy folks here in the studio with me right now, Eric Caldwell and Robin Gray Davis. Thanks, you guys, for coming in.
You
guys
certainly.
Friday ahead of you at the Canvas with the Comedy and Character Workshop, right? So what's going on? The volume control is right there. You're looking for a little bit more.
There you want
more.
I can hear you.
You want more Andy. I know the
always,
feeling.
Always.
So tell me, Roblin, a little bit about this. You conduct a lot of different workshops. The last time we were talking about a writer's workshop, this is a little bit different area, performance and that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. We were talking about storytelling.
Right.
The presentations of stories. And this is a little bit different. We're looking at creating character through physical improvisation, specifically looking at comedy. So how are we funny? And that's kind of what this Comedy and Character Workshop is about.
So what's the secret? Come on, give it up. How are you funny? What's funny?
Oh, you know that secret.
I mean, that's an interesting philosophical could talk about that question for hours and hours,
and
right?
There probably is no one answer.
Yeah.
It really is, and that's what we'll be looking at in this workshop is how are we uniquely funny, or how are we uniquely entertaining? What are our idiosyncrasies that make us who we are, but also are pretty humorous to other people and ourselves if we take a close look. So,
and Morally Impoverished will be there as well, represented by you as well, Eric. Is that right? Or tell me about your involvement.
Well, Morally Impoverished has been hosting the Improject every month in collaboration with the Canvas at Reach. We're looking at different aspects of improvised performance. So in the past, we've had improvised storytelling, improvised scene work, and last month, we even had the improvised poetry slam. So we've been looking at not just improv comedy or improv theater, but what are the different unscripted ways in which people can perform? The physical theater side is something that we have yet to explore in the Improject, but it's an absolutely natural fit.
Sure, yeah. Makes total sense. So what are some of the areas that you concentrate on when you talk to people about this kind of area of comedy and performing in a comedic way? I mean, I know you as such a physical comedian and a physical performer, but I know that's not all that you do. So is that some of what you concentrate on? Or?
That is what we'll be looking at in this workshop tomorrow night. And it's an interesting process, almost opposite to some other approaches to theater, where we really look at listening to the body and the physical impulses that we have and use those as our creative spark for finding character. So even if it's feeling how your knees move when you walk around and exaggerating that, or if you're pulled through the sternum as you walk normally, how can you exaggerate that? And then what does that stir up in your mind? What does that stir up in your gut? And you follow that impulse and usually can create a very compelling, interesting, often humorous character from that place.
Yeah, there are these comedic elements to these things that people do subconsciously, or the way they carry themselves, the way they move, gestures that people do like a time and again, the old Clinton thumb shake thing, and you know all those things. Like so often that is the key to what is interestingly funny about someone without and it's an interesting thing too, because it can, if you do it correctly, I think it can be without mocking, mm-hmm. without a cruelty kind of aspect that can happen when people are looking to look at something that's funny. You know, that physical comedy is something we all share. We can all kind of share that common foibles that we all have about how we move around.
It is, and it's very much about that. If you observe carefully who you are and how you are in the world physically, that's a great source of inspiration. And if you are willing to laugh at yourself and then willing to allow others to laugh at you, it can generate just a really extraordinary and challenging but fulfilling experience. So,
and how does that figure into are there times in improv when that physicality is really the key that you're looking for?
Oh, absolutely.
Because I think improv, sometimes we think about improv so much about wordplay, mm-hmm. about give me a scenario, you know, those kinds of things, which are the things that trigger a lot of the exercises and fun scenes that happen in improv. But then there is this physicality that is part of that.
Certainly. What you run into with improv, a lot of beginning improvisers and even experienced improvisers will get into what's called talking head improv, where you're standing there and you have person one, wah, 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 person two, wah, 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 and back to person one, wah, 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 without anyone actually moving or doing anything. When you get into that space, people can start to tune out. When you're used to using your body will find something to do, either in object work, going out and starting to cut up some celery for an hors d'oeuvre, which adds something to the scene, or you add a physicality, which can also impact how you talk. It can impact what you're carrying. For instance, if my voice changes like this, it may change how I'm walking, and it may change what is actually in my hands. So what might look like I'm reaching for a handrail all of a sudden looks like I'm reaching for a walker just because of the change in my voice and the change in my posture.
Mm-hmm.
So the physicality definitely translates to adding to whatever is happening on stage.
Is a lot of what you do when you're teaching this stuff, Roblin, getting through like blockages that people might have to sort of becoming aware of that and tapping into that?
Sure. And that's one of the difficulties. That's one of the challenges. But it's very rewarding when you come up against that invisible wall, acknowledge it, observe it, and then break through in some way and use it for your performance.
I mean, there's one thing I think that happens for people who are kind of have comedic minds, which is that their comedy has developed over their course of their lives as sometimes a defense mechanism, being funny, being snarky, being those things, but allowing yourself to look foolish in a way by doing physical comedy can actually be probably pretty intimidating.
Yes, it certainly can, especially in our society where that might, that's not necessarily an appropriate thing to do all the time. But the theater is a great convention for exploring that world.
Yeah, I mean,
it's very liberating.
Whether it's men, well, you're supposed to be strong and
that's
not,
right.
Or whether it's women who are supposed to, of course, be gorgeous and beautiful all the time. This is our social. This is the pressures put on. I can think. Now, what about that? Do you feel like there's a in physical comedy? Do you feel like there's a man woman difference and breakdown? And as far as the people that you see and work with,
There is. It's difficult to articulate, difficult to describe. And of course, we're all human, so we can relate to very human themes no matter who we are. But there are, I think, particular ways that women can be funny, that men can be funny, that can emerge in exploring these works. Again, though, it really is rooted in the individual.
Mm-hmm.
So.
John Leo had a workshop several years ago. John was a former clowning partner of Roblin. He did a workshop called The Zen of Clown, where he was working. I was probably the only person in that class that had any theatrical experience at all. You had a lot of people who were from the community who just decided that they wanted to learn this and be in touch with this. And John worked very much at having people explore themselves, explore their own perceived weaknesses, and come out of that with something strong, moving, and beautiful, while at the same time being completely vulnerable to the reaction of your audience.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing. Well, tell me just one more time, give us a update on the time, place, all that stuff. It's happening Friday, happening tomorrow, right?
Yes, it is. 6 o'clock down at the Canvas.
And there's also going to be an open performance at 8 o'clock. So whether you're interested in the workshop or not, we'd love to have you come down at 8 o'clock and be audience for the people who have workshopped and are showing off their new skills.
And is there a charge for the workshop?
We're requesting a donation to the Canvas at Reach. However, there is no charge for either the workshop or the performance.
Come on, you guys got to get paid. Come on. Get some money here. What's going on?
There may be some money to be
just
made.
The goodness of your heart. You give and you give and you give.
We really want people to come out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And really get a sense for what improvised performance can be and what the range of improvised performance can be.
Very cool. Eric and Roblin, thanks so much. Have a great time tomorrow. And folks, go in there and get people to enjoy you and your comedy and help them laugh.
Thanks, Andy.
I hate to say it, but I told you so. Don't mind my preaching to you. I said, don't trust them, baby, now you know. You don't learn everything there is to know in school. Wouldn't believe me when I gave advice. I said that he was a tease. If you won't help, you better ask me nice. So be sincere, convince me with a pretty please. Laugh, laugh, I thought I'd die. It seems so funny to me. Laugh, laugh, you met a guy who taught you how it feels to be lonely. Oh, so lonely. Don't think I'm being funny when I say you got just what you deserve. I can't help feeling you found out today. You thought you were too good, you had a lot of nerve.
Laugh, laugh. We'll go to the Comedy and Character Workshop with Eric and Roblin, and you'll learn how to do that and make others do that. Another great thing that's happening this weekend, a bouldering competition happening down at the Rock Dump. And Phil England from the Rock Dump's with me. Hey, man. How you doing? Thanks.
Doing good. How you doing, Andy?
Great. Thanks for coming in. And tell me about this bouldering.
Bouldering is climbing without ropes.
Sounds crazy.
You're not climbing too high, though. You're only climbing about 10, 15 feet off the deck, and you got pads and spotters with you, so...
So 15 feet. So you've got spotters and you've got lots of pads at the Rock Dump, of course.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. We've got a new padded floor that came in last year.
Cool.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah.
The competition is from 3 to 6. It's $15 in advance for a ticket if you want to climb and $20 at the door if you'd like to climb.
Yeah.
Spectators are free. We're going to have a barbecue. Going to have a bunch of prizes from Foggy Mountain, Heritage Coffee Company, and Aurora Project. Got a couple T-shirts. And we're going to try and get a few more prizes on
this. Isn't like Juno Fest, is it?
No.
Okay. Another one, flat screen TVs. Come on in. No, all right. So, we're going to. So, and you're pretty new at having the Rock Dump, right?
I've only been working there for about 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay.
I've been climbing there for about 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
It's really awesome. It's a good place to. Plan parties for kids. It's a good atmosphere. We just started toddler time on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays from 10 to noon or 1, somewhere around there. It's free. Bring your kids in. They can run around on the padded floor, scream, yell.
Yeah, as loud as they want.
Yep, they can just let loose.
And, it's such a great thing to think about the Rock Dump for as winter closes in and these kind of darker months. It's great to do outdoor activities, but on those days when you're not getting outdoors, so fun to just get into a nice, dry place, be climbing around and get a different kind of athletic activity.
Instead of climbing the walls at your house, why not come do it at the Rock Dump,
there
huh?
you go. Yeah, they're all set up to do it. All right, so the boulder, we just have a minute here, but the bouldering competition happened at the Rock Dump.
Yep, 3 to 6.
3 to 6 on Saturday,
mm-hmm.
And then the barbecue, of course.
Yep.
Well, the barbecue is happening all the time or right afterwards?
Right afterwards.
Because you don't want the sticky fingers going up the wall.
You don't want
That's
the
cheating.
Greasy holds, yeah. Sabotaging.
Sabotaging.
With hot dog grease.
Leaving grease stains behind. That's no way to treat the Rock Dump. All right, well, Phil, thanks so much. That's happening at the
Thank
Rock
you,
Dump.
Andy.
It's happening Saturday. We'll be talking about it over at KXL in a little while as well. And we'll be getting to Grateful Dogs in just a moment here, but first, here's a Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 13th of December, 2012. It's the birthday of the poet Kenneth Patchen, born Niles, Ohio, 1911, author of more than 40 books of poetry like Before the Brave and Hurrah for Anything, and novels including The Journal of Albion Moonlight. Kenneth Patchen, who said, "Think enough and you won't know anything." It's the birthday of the poet James Wright, Martins Ferry, Ohio, 1927. Went to Kenyon College on the GI Bill after World War II, studied writing formally. First book of poems, The Green Wall, in 1956, and then St. Judas, 3 years later. Wright thought that he was finished, that he'd said everything he had to say, and then he met the poet Robert Bly and Bly's wife Carol, and they befriended him and took him with them on their Minnesota farm. James Wright said, "They loved me, and they saved my life." It's the birthday of the music critic Lester Bangs, Escondido, California, 1948. Wrote for Rolling Stone, Cream, other magazines. Lester Bang, who wrote, "The ultimate sin of any performer is contempt for the audience." And it's the birthday of Mary Todd, born Lexington, Kentucky, 1818, to a well-off family. She was petite, had sparkling blue eyes, reddish-brown hair, highly educated, interested in politics, moved to Springfield, Illinois to live with her sister, and it was there that she met Abraham Lincoln. They were opposites in many ways, and she was also being courted by Lincoln's political rival, Stephen Douglas, who Mary Todd turned down. She and Lincoln had a stormy on-again, off-again courtship. They broke up and they got back together. In 1842, they married, moved into a boarding house where their first child was born. She suffered from depression, anxiety, paranoia, and migraines. Her time in the White House was not happy. After their son Willie died of typhoid fever, Mary Lincoln was crippled by grief. After her husband's assassination, her health declined. She was nearly destitute for a time, committed to an insane asylum, attempted suicide, and spent her last years at her sister Elizabeth's home in Springfield, rarely coming out of her room. Here's a poem for today by Mary Oliver, entitled Lines Written in the Days of Growing Darkness. Every year we have been witness to it, how the world descends into a rich mash in order that it may resume. And therefore, who would cry out to the petals on the ground to stay, knowing as we must how the vivacity of what was is married to the vitality of what will be? I don't say it's easy, but what else will do if the love one claims to have for the world be true? So let us go on. Cheerfully enough, this and every crisping day, though the sun be swinging east and the ponds be cold and black and the sweets of the year be doomed. A poem by Mary Oliver, Lines Written in the Days of Growing Darkness, from her collection A Thousand Mornings, published by the Penguin Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering articles from international writers about finances to art, food, wine, and culture, you can celebrate the weekend at subscribe.wsj.com/getweekend. And by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for KTOO comes from GCI Local Phone, providing digital phone service to homes and businesses in Juneau and throughout Southeast Alaska. On the web at gci.com.
It just makes you happy, doesn't it, Pam?
It does make me happy. My favorite Christmas album.
That's your favorite one, huh?
That's it.
Well, Pam Nelson is here from Grateful Dogs of Juneau, and you are someone who's helping organize a pet food drive. And tell me just a little bit about this. Tell me about the idea as it started a couple years ago, you said, right?
It did. It was my brainchild a couple years ago from seeing down in the lower 48 people a need in local food banks for pet food. So I talked with Darren Adams, our local manager at the Southeast Alaska Food Bank, if he thought there would be a need to have pet food available to the community, and he said definitely. And so this is our third year hosting a Christmas pet food drive to benefit the Southeast Alaska Food Bank.
Well, that's really cool. So how does it work? People go to the food bank as they normally do, and then they get dog food if they need it or cat food if they need it. Is that just how it works? Or
yep.
Do you okay?
Yep. The Southeast Alaska Food Banks provide food to different agencies, but and every Saturday morning they're open to the general public to come and pick up food as needed. And so then this way there's dog and cat food available for people to provide food for their furry family members. And Darren has said that it's always been a well received and always goes pretty quickly. So we try to help support families being able to feed everyone.
Yeah. How can people get involved in this?
We are actually, it's starting Friday tomorrow through Sunday, and there's various drop-off boxes throughout town. Downtown, Foodland IGA and Rainbow Foods is allowing us to put collection boxes. In Lemon Creek, we have a pet nanny. We'll have a collection box. And out in the valley, we have a multitude of places where you can go. Canines Unlimited, Wee Fishy Shop, Petco, Safeway, Super Bear, Southeast Alaska Animal Medical Center, and Juneau Veterinary Hospital will all have collection boxes where you can drop off preferably unopened bags of dog or cat food.
That's the one thing I was going to ask. What kind of stuff are you hoping to get?
Anything that people feel, you know, they want to, you know, drop off, and, you know, they can purchase it in different places and drop it off. So preferably unopened bags, can be varying different sizes of cat and dog food. We're grateful dogs, but we're, you know, an equal opportunity for the pet food or canned food or even treats if people want to drop off treats. You know, it's just a nice thing for people to for some people, their pets, you know, really are their only family members, and so sometimes this can really help them and to help the pets have a happy holiday season.
Absolutely. Yeah. Is there more of a need around holidays or winter months than in other months? Do you know?
Sometimes, because sometimes people get a little strapped at the holiday season and go a little overboard with things, and so it's kind of nice to have that. Have it in that holiday season. But it's always the food bank will actually always take, if you want to donate pet food to them, they will always take it at any time of the year.
Yeah, and it's one of those things that's not quite as perishable as a lot of other foods. And as long as it's sealed and that kind of thing, then it can keep for a long time.
Exactly.
Be on hand for a long time. Is there a certain level that they try to reach with like a volume of pet food?
The first year we did this, we collected a little over 900 pounds of food. Last year we collected a little over 950 pounds of food. So we're shooting for over 1,000 pounds.
Half a ton.
This year.
We would
love to get a 1,000 pounds of food out there for the pets of Juneau.
I think there's half a ton of love for pets in Juneau out there.
Yes, I think there
right?
is. Right?
Let's
there
do
is.
This. Let's get this done, folks. So the thing is just getting bags of food, treats, cans for dogs, cats, do other pets as well, or are you kind of concentrating on dogs and cats? That's where the most need is?
We mostly focus on dogs and cats, but if people want to, you know, throw in some bird or hamster food there, you know, I'm sure there might be some little critters out there that, you know, need some help too. So if people, you know, if they're that's who they feel drawn to helping, then, you know, we will take it all.
Now, you said this was your brainchild about 3 years ago. How did you, what made you think about this?
I'm just someone, I'm involved a lot in with rescue dogs. I have all of my dogs are pretty much rescue dogs.
Me too.
And when you started seeing the economic decline down south, you know, where a lot of people were having to give up their homes and, you know, there was losing their jobs and things like that. And so I was part of some of the national groups that I just am a member of or sort of watch and just see that, oh, you know, there's some food banks. People are doing food banks for pets, and I approached our local food bank here to say, would we be interested in doing that. And, you know, Darren had said, yeah, that would be a great idea. There's definitely a need.
Right. So they kind of hadn't really done that to this point, hadn't had a collection area for pets to that up to that point.
No, not on a regular, not on a regular basis.
Such
so.
A cool thing that yeah. you and you're someone you work at the hospital.
I do. I work at the hospital full time. Yeah. So this is just a passion.
These volunteer stuff. You take this as a message out there, folks. Volunteers make such a big difference in this town, and it's people who are just as busy as you and me, but they find time to do this extra work. It's so cool that you do it, Pam. So
great.
Thank you.
Yep.
My dog thanks you.
happy to do it.
Yeah. Well, and the dogs and cats are happy to have that that food, and it's just nice to know that I think a community that takes care of its animals, that's a really good indication of what kind of community you live in, you know. And I think that it's nice because you know, I think in this town we have a dog shelter and a pet shelter here that you know, finds homes for its dogs.
Yes.
You know, it
mm-hmm.
finds homes for all of its dogs. And they, you know, it's not that kind of really awful situation that can happen in a lot of cities
right.
across America where that's not what happens to a lot of those animals that are in the shelters. So I think that, you know, it seems like Juno really takes care of its pets, and this is just another way of doing it. So one more time, let people know where they can drop off stuff and how to go about doing it.
The pet food drive is going to start tomorrow, Friday, December 14th, and it's going to run through the 16th. And they can drop off at downtown at Foodland IGA. Rainbow Foods in Lemon Creek, they can go over to the Pet Nanny. And in the Valley, Canines Unlimited, which is out on Taku Boulevard, Wee Fishy Shop, Petco, which is over in the Nugget Mall, Safeway, Super Bear Supermarket, Southeast Alaska Animal Medical Center, and Juneau Veterinary Hospital will all have collection boxes. And we're looking for sealed bags of dog or cat food or canned cat food or treats or any animal that you would like to support and make sure that they have a happy holiday season, too.
A happy holiday season so they can be happy just like these dogs. Pam Nelson, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, I think I'd heard a cat there. Those dogs scattered all of a sudden. They got out of here. It was Nancy DeKearney came in hissing. Nancy, how you doing?
Good.
Well, we got another busy weekend here of the arts. We've just had the Nutcracker folks in, and they talked about the cool stuff that's happening this weekend. And we also talked to folks at the Canvas about the thing that's happening there tomorrow night. Eric and Roblin came in and talked about their workshop. So what
so
other
what's
stuff?
Left
we,
to, hey, there's nothing
what
left.
Other, I'm sure we got a ton of other stuff.
And you were just talking about the pet collection.
Yes,
thing,
and the
so
pet
that's
collection,
good.
Yes.
Yeah, and we just missed the holiday tea. Or you got 15 minutes to get up to the holiday tea if
okay.
you want to do that.
Oh, the holiday tea.
Yeah,
where's that?
That's up at the Baranoff. They have three of them. And it's always fun, you know, the little petit fours. And,
should we go now?
Yeah, let's go.
I'll put on a CD. We should be fine.
Yes, excellent.
Sounds wonderful.
Okay, well, let's see. Tomorrow, Friday at 5 o'clock, from 5 to 10, there is Christmas in Hawaii Luau happening over at the Jack. It's $30. I think there's a $20 ticket for seniors. It includes dinner and a show. There's dancing. There's all sorts of stuff going on. So this should be really fun. I think this is the first of their events that they've done, so give that a shot.
That should be nice, yeah.
Yeah. That should be fun. And you've already talked about the comedy and character workshop.
Have.
With those comedies.
Yes.
And you've already talked about the Nutcracker Ballet, so we'll just leap past that.
Let's plie and
pas de deux or something over there. But at 7 o'clock also, out at GW Teals, we got Kari Griven and Erica Lee performing with Tom Loker and Dave Shakley. And
that's a pretty exciting group there, Erica and Kari
together
I know. On stage.
It's going to be fun.
I like that. That
yeah.
sounds good. Yeah.
yeah. So check that out. It's nice to see lots of stuff happening out on the other parts of the town, too. Let's see. The Best Christmas Pageant Ever continues. We've got that 7:30 Friday, Saturday for the rest of the month. And that's at the Sunroom at the Juno Urgent Care.
And it's
put on by the theater at Latitude 58. It's a great little story.
Wow.
Saturday morning.
And the Juno Urgent Care is that place that's got the crazy lights going.
Yeah.
You turn the radio on to some I
don't know
frequency. I don't even know. And all the lights go crazy. And then cars just veer off the road.
They don't want you texting, but they want you doing that.
That's a self-fulfilling prophecy for Juno Urgent Care.
Well, I've never really thought of that. It's a very interesting business plan.
Sinister. No, it's nice. It's nice.
The 9 o'clock Saturday morning, get up and get going because there's the Christmas Bazaar at the Moose Lodge, and there is also out at the Eagle Valley Center an open house all day. It's the Saga Place out by Malaga Harbor, and you can go snowshoeing or all kinds of fun stuff. You can win a prize, I don't know, stuff.
Yeah.
Do some stuff. There's live music at Nugget Mall, and there's photos with Santa, and there's the Nutcracker. There's a Tis the Season Alaska Youth Choir concert with the All-State Honor Band members. That's at Northern Light Church at 7 o'clock.
That sounds cool.
It does.
Yeah, the All-State Honors Band?
Yeah, is performing with the Alaska Youth Choir.
Wow. So is that kids from all over the state, I
No,
guess?
I think it's just the members from here.
I see.
I believe that's the case.
Okay.
Don't quote me on anything.
All right.
I'm just a real big part of the arts is being creative.
It's live radio. It's gone now.
All right. And also at 7 o'clock, it's the 6th annual Black and White Ball, which the folk dancers, the ballroom dance group, puts on. This will be at Rockwell. You get your tickets at the door, and they encourage formal attire.
Yes.
I've seen you.
It's a black and white ball. You got to wear
formal. You should wear that white light-up outfit that we used to have for you.
That's right.
It hasn't seen a lot of action lately,
I don't think.
So anyway, it's always a fun time. They'll have Thunder Mountain Big Band playing and, you know, real dancing, that kind of stuff.
Very cool.
Also at 7:30, there's the Holiday Barn Dance, which is at St. Anne's Parish Hall. Rumblefish is performing for that. And there's a variety of different prices to get in. And if you are a Vista volunteer or something like that, you get in for free.
And hey, Rumblefish is a fun band.
They are fun.
They are the ones who just did the Buster Keaton, the General.
Uh-huh.
And I got to see that. They are really cooking. They're a good band. I recommend Rumblefish.
Highly recommend it. All right. So that takes care of Saturday. You can see the Best Christmas Pageant Ever again. And on Sunday, there's the Nutcracker and live music at Nugget Mall. All through the week, out at Nugget Mall, you can have your gifts wrapped by a variety of different, like sometimes it's to benefit Thunder Mountain High School. Sometimes it's on Monday, I happen to note that it's for the American Cancer Society. So if you just don't like to wrap Christmas presents, you can go there and do that.
There you go.
Tuesday is another one of the holiday teas at the Baranoff. It's at 4 p.m. At 4:30, there's a holiday party for Aware over at Mount Jumbo Gym. They say this is for all ages. And of course, there's always photos with Santa at Nugget Mall, 5 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday and Wednesday. Santa's getting pretty close. I don't know how he's time to do this.
I don't know, man. He makes these. Well, we're pretty close to the North Pole, so.
Oh, I guess so. He doesn't have to go so far to go.
It's a day trip.
But on Wednesday is when Hit the Jackpot opens.
Hey! Hit the Jackpot. Gifts. No. What's the theme?
It's fairy tales.
Fairy tales.
Yes.
What did I say? Gifts.
That was Mudroom.
That's Mudroom.
Yeah, and you can, you know.
I do this Mudroom. Show too much. my brain is addled with all the things going on.
Many things. But anyway, Hit the Jackpot, and I just would have to say, do call. We open up noon on Wednesday. We're there Thursday, Friday. But a lot of school groups are coming in the afternoon during the day. So call before you come during the day just to make sure there's room. But all the way through to the 30th, we'll be closing early on Christmas Eve and on New Year's Eve and closed on Christmas. But
that seems okay.
Yeah.
We'll let you have those days
off. But, you know, we are looking for a few groundskeepers and stuff like that. So you can go on our website and sign up.
The gopher problem there?
Yeah, we do. It's lots of fun, and I'm really looking forward to it this year. Bing's made this neat mural that you can stick your head in and take your Christmas photos with.
Nice.
Yeah, it's
all
fun.
All right.
Yeah, it's lots
and
of fun.
And let's give a quick shout-out to Bing and everything that he does.
He does so much in this community.
He's such a great volunteer.
Just comes in, does it.
Yeah, and he's just one of those people that just quietly contributes to the artistic fiber of this community without ever even, you wouldn't know it.
He
would never claim credit for it, but he does it.
There he is. Okay, so, and then I guess on Wednesday there's another of the holiday teas, and Thursday there's a champagne and sparkling wine tasting at the Rookery, which I personally plan to attend. So, you know, the holiday season's just getting really geared up and exciting.
Yeah.
There's lots of music and lots of dancing and lots of all sorts of stuff. So, yeah.
Let's just talk a little. We've got arts up. We have the executive director of the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council here. Let's talk a little bit broader about arts. We just had a great discussion last night with the mayor himself. Came to the Arts Roundtable and talked to people who are part of the Arts Roundtable, which is all the different arts organizations. That was a really great discussion.
We had a lot of, and it was, I really want to thank the mayor for taking time to come, and I believe Rory Watt will come and talk to us. We do the roundtable, usually it's the last Monday of every month, but the mayor is obliged to go to the assembly meetings.
Yes, well. We'll let him.
Yeah, so we rescheduled it so that it would fit into his schedule. But things like the situation at what's going on at Marine Park and things like that, Rory Watt is scheduled to be at the February roundtable, so people who are interested about that can come. But basically, it's an opportunity for anybody who's interested in the arts, art groups, art artists, or just consumers of the arts to come and get to know each other. Talk a little bit.
And is the Arts Roundtable on the calendar on the JAHC.org?
Yeah. And if I get, you know, real enthusiastic, I put the agenda there. But sometimes you just have to guess.
I mean, just come to it.
Yes, just come to it. It's lots of fun. It's at 5:15 and lasts for about an hour, hour and a half, something like that. And, you know, we are just finalists for this Any Given Child thing. And we've been meeting about that today. It's very exciting. We had a meeting.
Tell me about it. Yeah.
You didn't get to all these meetings.
No, I haven't gotten to the meetings. I was going to something at 5 o'clock.
Yes. Two representatives from the Kennedy Center are here, and it is a wonderful opportunity. I kind of knew a little bit about it, but now I know a whole lot about it, which is basically they come and help a community identify what assets we have already in the community that we can use to make sure that all kids, every school in the elementary grades gets an equal opportunity at the arts. So maybe it's figuring out something like, we have the symphony working with fourth graders and fifth graders, and we have maybe the Juno Dance Unlimited people doing something. Maybe we could all work, like sort of coordinate what we do. It's just it's a really great opportunity for us. So work with us for about 4 years to come together with
a
community plan.
It's a four-year commitment that they make. Incredible.
Yeah, that they will help us sort of analyze where we are, where we'd like to be with arts education, what we have to work with, what's missing, how we get what we need, and all that sort of stuff.
It's exciting. This is a big deal. Only 9 communities have been chosen so far in the life of this program, this program happening through the Lincoln Center. And
Kennedy Center.
Yeah, they're both very good presidents. But we're finalists now.
We're finalists now.
Doesn't mean we've been chosen yet. So let's not. We can't jump the gun quite yet.
But we're really very excited. Yes, we're hoping that this afternoon they went out to see the Jam kids performing. I think they got 117 violins, by the way, delivered to the music programs out there today. They're on their way over to look at Perseverance Theater, and they're just sort of trying to learn a lot about the community in 24 hours.
Yes, it's hard.
And they leave this afternoon. But it's a very exciting opportunity. And you know, one of the things about living in Juneau is we are sort of the state capital, but in that role, we have the capacity to take our resources and benefit the whole state, particularly the Southeast area. And I think that's what we're hoping here is if we become a successful location, then we can help the other communities sort of emulate what we're doing and spread the work throughout.
Absolutely.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about that.
Such a great opportunity and a cool thing. And as you said, we're all very excited about it. But, thanks so much, Nancy. That's Arts Up. Lots going on this weekend. Of course, the holiday season, it's all gearing up. It's all happening. It's all swirling around. There's lots to do in Juneau.
Four. We're going to play golf.
And also four. I see.
Four. I'm out of here.
And golf. And don't forget golf. Yes. And the Nutcracker. Thanks, Nancy DeCherney from the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. And that's a Juno afternoon for today, this Thursday afternoon, December 13th. We got cloudy skies forecast for tonight with scattered rain showers and snow showers. Southeast winds at 10 miles an hour. Lows around 31 degrees. And that hovering right around 31 degrees at night and getting up to about 35 in the day is the foreseeable forecast here for the next few days. With snow and rain tomorrow, rain in the late afternoon with snow accumulation 2 to 4 inches possible tomorrow. Snow accumulation up to 2 inches tomorrow night as well, but again, rain mixed with that snow. And snow and rain showers forecast for Friday and Saturday night as well. And then a snow likely for Sunday as the temperatures get a little bit colder Sunday night with lows around 22 degrees. That's it for a Juno afternoon. Thanks to everyone joining me today, including the Juno Dance Unlimited and Eric Caldwell, Roblin Gray Davis, also Pam Nelson from the Pet Food Drive, Grateful Dogs, and Nancy DeCherney from Arts Up. NPR Headlines is next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear.